So in World War I, humanity was in fairly dire need of a hero. England in particular, stymied in the deadly trenches of Europe, slaughtered in military fiascos such as Gallipoli, Verdun. Winston Churchill nearly lost his entire career when he led a disastrous naval raid against Turkish forces in the Dardanelles. At just this moment, an unlikely hero stepped forward, nowhere near the front lines of the Great War. From the sideshow uprising in Arabia, it was a thin, quiet-voiced Lieutenant T.E. Lawrence who spoke up, challenged his superiors, and became an immortal legend whose spirit still haunts every conflict in the tumultuous Middle East.
I think your book is right. The desert is an ocean in which no oar is dipped. And on this ocean, the Bedou go where they please and strike where they please. This is the way the Bedou has always fought. You're famed throughout the world for fighting in this way, and this is the way you should fight now.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, sir, but you're wrong. Fall back on Yanbo, sir, and the Arab rising becomes one poor unit in the British army.
What is this to you?
Lawrence, do you know you're a traitor?
No, Colonel. He is a young man, and young men are passionate, but they must say their say.
Alec Guinness and Peter O'Toole, perhaps I could be forgiven for relying on the classic film Lawrence of Arabia with its vivid picture of the mythic Lawrence. But maybe not, because Michael Korda, a legendary editor, publisher, and author, Michael Korda's new book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia, is perhaps an even more vivid and more sharply drawn portrait of one of the most intriguing characters of the 20th century. Michael Korda joins us from his home in Dutchess County, New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
This book is, you know, where do I begin? But let me just start with the question posed in the David Lean film there. Was T.E. Lawrence a traitor on some level in the way he went about both creating his own myth and in challenging the authority of the British military?
No, never a traitor. I think Lawrence created for himself, perhaps inevitably, a situation in which he could only feel guilt and ambivalence, which was something of his central personality to begin with. He continually attempted to achieve what the British wanted to achieve in the Middle East, but at the same time, he wanted to get for the Arabs what he already knew the British and the French, and for that matter, the Americans, would never give them when the war was won. It's that ambivalence that explains the rest of Lawrence's life, the refusal to wear or accept any of his decorations, the periods of self-flagellation, the absolute determination to give up his name and his honors and his titles and enlist in the Air Force as a simple airman and later in the Army as a simple soldier. It's self-punishment for what happened during the war.
Well, and he was betrayed by the British and his designs for what would be the result of the Arab uprising, as you write, were not the outcome he wanted or expected. But his being drawn into this world of Arabia comes from his birth, really, in some ways. He was a medievalist. He was a history buff. He loved this place. And how do you sort of go about tracking the means by which he actually became Lawrence of Arabia? And the pictures we see in the movie are actually very accurate of the way he portrayed himself at the height of his fame.
Yes, at the height of his fighting. His fame came later. He became an international celebrity, perhaps the world's first great media celebrity, and also the world's first great media celebrity victim. But I think that Lawrence trained himself for some great task. He trained himself to be a hero meticulously and carefully, starting as a child. He set himself impossible tasks and did them. He bicycled hundreds of miles in dreadful weather to see castles. He exercised himself physically to the point of very nearly of self-destruction. He had an inner vision of himself as a hero. When the war came and when he was shipped to Cairo, that vision of himself coincided with the opportunity to go and meet Faisal and become part of the Arab revolt, which he took with both hands. It was not something he was ordered to do. And when it happened, he was ready for it. He seized it. He became what he had always believed he could become. And then, of course, like everybody who gets what they've always wanted, he was deeply disappointed by
right.
it when it happened.
Well, before the disappointment, just describe, he believed it, of course, but why, just describe how outlandish the victory at Aqaba that he engineered and became the sort of beginning of his triumph was at the time that he engineered it.
Well, it's important to understand that nobody in the British Army contemplated his taking Aqaba at all. He was sent off rather vaguely to Jeddah, the port of Mecca, to make some kind of judgment about which of the sons of Sharif Hussein, the Sharif of Mecca, might be the most suitable to lead an Arab revolt. Since the British were paying for that revolt, they wanted to have some choice who would be the leader. And he met in turn each of the sons, and riding into the desert, which nobody had expected him to do, he met Faisal and decided that this was the man he was looking for. Once he had found Faisal, he did an extraordinary thing, which is that he rode, first of all, to Damascus with a price on his head as a British officer, and Damascus was then deep behind the enemy lines in Turkey, in Turkish hands, and met there with members of the beginning Arab political revolt, and then managed to put together, which everybody would have said was impossible, a collection of tribes who hated each other to attack Aqaba from across the desert since he couldn't be attacked from the sea. It's several hundred miles of probably the worst country, the worst desert, the most brutal travel in the entire world, which Lawrence undertook. He quite frankly, undertook the impossible and brought it off at the age of 28. And when he returned to Cairo to tell them that he had taken Aqaba, they all thought that he was still in the desert with Faisal. There was an astonishment that is mirrored by the fact that he was recommended for the Victoria Cross of the Distinguished Service Order and was eventually made, because there were no British witnesses to his feat, a companion of the Order of the Bath, which at the age of 28 is one of the most signal honors that Britain can give a military hero. So Lawrence really stepped into the desert and created his own legend, and also stepped into the desert and created the beginning of the Arab revolt in a meaningful sense.
Michael Korda, many people often say that Lawrence of Arabia, that he changed the map of the Middle East. Is that fair, or were those lines drawn before he got there?
No. He not only changed them, he drew them, for better or for worse. The existence of the state of Jordan and the existence of the state of Iraq were largely determined and drawn up by a triumvirate of Winston Churchill, Lawrence, and Gertrude Bell, the desert explorer. Much of what happened in the Middle East is Lawrence's doing. Not all of it has worked out well, you understand, but he created three states, of which two survived, and he made two kings, of which one kingdom has survived, the Kingdom of Jordan. And I might add that Lawrence's vision for the Middle East was a much, much more rational one than the one we are faced with. It would have had a larger Arab state. It would have had equal Jewish and Arab control over Palestine. And it would have had unlimited Jewish immigration into Palestine.
I've got to end with a yes or no, Michael Korda. Does General Petraeus walk in the footsteps of T.E. Lawrence even today?
Only if he were willing to do what Lawrence did, which was to walk into his enemy's tent or home unarmed and barefooted and sit down and talk.
Michael Korda, thanks so much. Author of Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. Thanks so much on this Friday.
I'm Celeste Headlee. This is a show that's all about home, wherever it may be.
And whether it's in Arabia or not, tell us where yours is. 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.